along, everybody. Well, we're here to talk about the Champions League, obviously, and the Europa League. But I'm afraid to say, Terry, we're talking Diego Maradona again. We only talked about him recently for his 60th birthday. But the sad news, as I'm sure you've all heard, is that the great man has passed away. I mean, what a footballer. Let's before we try and put him into some kind of context in terms of La Liga or anything, Terry, let's just reflect on the impact that he had, which we're seeing is incredible, isn't it? Even in these times of restrictive movement and everything, the outpouring of grief, particularly in Argentina, but also around the world for this man, shows what a massive impact he had on football and beyond football.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I think we have to separate the two as well. On football, his impact was obvious. The reasons why were obvious because he was an extraordinary talent. And I can remember, you know, back in the day when he was... I heard about him before he played for the national team. He was an incredible talent at the World Youth Cup. And everybody saw that immediately he was going to be possibly the next big superstar. And to see him win the World Cup, he didn't win it single-handedly, and that's impossible. But it's quite a common cliche to hear now. But he was 24 then, and he was captain, he was leader, he was the best player in the world by a mile. When we say about players being unplayable in that competition, he was, and he was just an incredible talent. And the impact off the pitch is, you know, the behaviour that goes with it. It would be a boring world if we were all the same. He had this God-given talent as a footballer, one of the smallest players around as well. He was an inspiration to me because I was trying to make my way in the game at 5'4", and he was roughly the same size. I then realised that I had to build my quads up. I mean, his quads are just a thing of beauty for a footballer, and, you know, to cope with the physical demands that were around in the game then. And he was just an idol for, you know, so many people. And players of my generation. And you can tell by the pictures that people are showing on social media where they're superstars that delighted to snuggle up to Diego and get a picture whenever they, you know, when the chance came. And to see the outpouring of grief now, it's understandable. It's expected as well, particularly in two parts of the world, I think in Argentina and in Napoli. I mean, what he did at Napoli was incredible. I mean, it's the only two titles they've ever won. They never won before he went there. They've never won since. And he turned the club around. I sometimes wonder how he ended up at Napoli. Why Napoli? I mean, he was the greatest talent in the world, and suddenly he ended up at a club with not a lot of history in terms of success and honours, and he transformed them.
Yes, because he left Spain in disgrace at the end of his first time there, because his last game, he'd obviously been there. He went there for 2 years. It was it's in my book, all this, by the way, the details of it. And I've just written something for Football España on it as well, where I'm debating about him versus Messi. We'll get there in a bit. But so he goes. It's the first time that we really see high finance coming into football, because they go and raise the cash. So it's Sandro Rosé's dad is the club secretary of Barcelona, and the president is promised to redevelop the new camp. So they need a big star, Barcelona. They go and raise the money in the American bond markets, and then stick it all in the back, stick cash in a van, and drive it to Buenos Aires and negotiate with the it was at Boca Junior by then, but you're negotiating with the Argentine, because it was the military regime that had been in there, that, you know, the Falklands War, the 1978 World Cup, it was that regime that we're in. And so they had to negotiate with all sorts of dodgy, serious, more than dodgy, deadly characters, and also buy him. So he was controversial then. Then he had the 2 years. He was ill while he was there. He had the horrendous injury from Goycochea, the butcher of Bilbao. Yep. He played 3 months later because his personal physician told him to throw his crutches away and walk. I mean, it's just everything about Maradona's life is crazy. They didn't win the league because Athletic, Clemente's Athletic were the strong team, this horrible, nasty, cynical team. And it finishes with that most extraordinary, which I always say, if you haven't seen that fight at the Copa del Rey final, in 1984, you've got to go and see it. I mean, fights on football pitches happened, but not.
It wasn't handbags, was it?
No, it certainly wasn't. No,
it's not handbags.
No, it wasn't people being brushed on the nose and claps into the ground, was it? I mean, Maradona knocked a guy clean out. Actually, yeah. Kicked him in the head as he's trying to get up. And so they're desperate for their money back because they paid a fortune, they paid a world record fee for him, and he's in disgrace. And so the only team that came up with the bid was Napoli, and then as soon as he goes, obviously he goes to Naples. Literally the first question at the press conference is, do you know about the Camorra, I think it's called, isn't it? The sort of the local mafia equivalent in Naples. And obviously pretty soon he did. And so what's even more extraordinary about Maradona that just cannot be replicated now is what he was sticking up his nose and what he was putting down his throat, junk food, booze, drugs, and still played football that. So that's why you can't compare him. You know, you can never compare eras, but you can't compare him accurately to Messi, because Messi's a vegan because he wants to purify his body. Whereas Maradona, imagine telling Maradona that.
But the other interesting thing about Maradona is he played the whole of his career with a rage. He always had a cause. Yeah. Now, whether it was the opposing centre half, the opposing manager, the referee, the opposing, you know, supporters, the media, he just every single game he seemed to play with a rage, and that rage suited him. You know, he had to have a cause, and you can see the passion that he played football with. But it's rage. He's playing with rage. Hence the reason he gets sent off in the World Cup. Hence the reason he goes berserk when they in the Copa del Rey final for Barcelona against Athletic Bilbao. The whole time he was in a rage. And you see him, we saw him, didn't we, in the previous World Cup, with that rage in the stadium, in the stands, acting slightly bizarrely. And he's just, life was just one sort of, it was incredible, you know, that the way he lived his life. And I saw footage recently, looked the other day, to see him playing for different clubs. Yeah. And when you see him playing for Sevilla, he's portly, he's overweight. And still producing extraordinary football, but he has a belly on him.
Yeah,
and you can see, you know, he doesn't. If it was any other player, you'd say, "What is that little fat bloke?" And then he pulls the ball down out of the air and finds. I think it was Suka. He was the striker. Yeah. Kept finding him with these incredible passes. And every time Suka was scoring, he was, "I can't believe this little bloke in midfield with a that's completely overweight." Is still managing to slide me in with passes that no other player can do. So, I mean, he was an extraordinary talented footballer, but his life was just, you know, one massive story. We were hearing about the children there, aren't we, that allegedly he's fathered up to 11. The count keeps going up now. And it's, you know, he lived a life of, for 60 years, he crammed in double that.
Yeah.
A lot of it good. A lot of it not so good, but he was an adventurous life, that's for sure.
Yeah, incredible. So where do you put him in the? It's hard because you're comparing across eras. I would definitely say top four. I would have Messi, Cristiano, Pele, Maradona, and after that, I think it's very hard to. I mean, if you want output, is the point of this article that I was writing. Basically, if you were offered them at 15, you'd go Messi. I think, and then Cristiano, because you want output, and Pele, also Pele played hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of games and was a remarkable...
Allegedly.
He definitely scored 700 odd. You know, when people criticise Pele, it's because he includes 300 goals in these endless world tours that he did. Yeah. And only scored 700 in competitive matches. So, you know, useless. But he was also a slightly different build for Maradona, but also light, you know, quite short, not tiny, but strong, gymnastic, athletic. And he also played in that era where you got kicked to bits.
Yeah.
And almost a legacy of that era of Maradona and Pele is the current era where players like Messi and Ronaldo are allowed to play and they get pushed over and they get a free kick. Whereas Maradona and Pele, and you, when you were an attacking player in your day, you got kicked to bits.
Yeah, there was people who had a career because that's what they were particularly good at.
Yeah.
They were tough, hard as nails, and knew how to cynically hurt, you know, take people out of the game. Eusebio was another player of that generation as well that suffered. And even I would say the Brazilian Ronaldo during his career, you know, he wasn't treated in the same way that the superstars are now.
Yeah.
So it's hard. I think Maradona, you know, even pre-death, I still would have had him as arguably the best player in the world. I think Messi is the closest in terms of that. You can understand the comparisons because you've got the Argentinian. They're both small. They're both left-footed. But there are big differences. We'd all be astonished now if we saw Messi running around like a lunatic, karate kicking people, you know, his personal life. So it's nice to have the contrast between the two. But essentially, they are very similar in terms of playing style.
Yeah,
that's natural because I was influenced by players that I grew up idolising and watching, and you wanted to, you know, you go out the garden, go over the park, you try and do the things that they did when you were a kid. And it's impossible for Messi not to have done that. You know, when you see Maradona winning World Cup, doing what he was doing for Napoli, you know, Messi then would be looking to, you know, copy those skills and copy the techniques of Maradona. So it does influence, you know, young players in trying to emulate the superstars of the world, which Maradona is one.
The differences between them are almost the differences between the eras, in a sense, aren't they? In that... The obvious question people say, so how would Messi have done being kicked and playing on those bad pitches? The counterpoint to that, I would always say, is how would Maradona have played and fared in this era? Now, he dealt with more adulation, more attention than anyone. But for one, constant drug testing, more tactical, being told what to do, being told where to go. So the protective ring that is now around players might also have stifled the life out of someone like Maradona. Because I think that with Garrincha, if you go back a previous era before Maradona, so a contemporary of Pele, he's the nearest thing to Maradona in that he lived this absolutely wild life, but also managed, amazingly similar to Maradona in the 62 World Cup. He had two brilliant games in the quarterfinal and the semi-final. He won the Golden Ball, Golden Boot, and won the competition as well. I read about Garrincha, I'm thinking there is no way he would, you know, there's so many levels of academy football. There's no way this kid would not have been kicked out. Now, it's wild.
Yeah, that's a point. Yeah, it's definitely a valid point. To conform for some of these people like Garrincha and Maradona, it just doesn't happen, does it? They're not going to do it.
Yeah.
So Maradona therefore lived his life. He had the power to live his life exactly as he wanted, good or bad, making right and wrong decisions, and no one was ever going to tell him no. You could argue that's the same with Messi, though, but Messi doesn't abuse that power, abuse that privilege of no one ever telling him, no, Lionel, you can't do that. So, you know, it's Maradona did. I mean, it was just some of the stories are just incredible. The documentary I watched, it's, you know, he's out like dancing and smoking cigars and drinking and overweight and then turning up and scoring a hat-trick within 24 hours.
Yeah.
Incredible natural talent. George Best was another one who, you know, 15 years to the day since he passed away on the same day that Maradona died. And George Best lived his life that way as well. So it's Maradona was an extraordinary footballer, extraordinary person. And, you know, to see the outpouring of grief isn't a surprise. No, definitely not.
Yeah, it's currently on your Channel 4 catch-up, whatever that's called, More 4 or whatever it's called, that Maradona documentary, the film he made with a load. I mean, it's amazing footage, isn't it? Because it's a load of sort of home video stuff from people he knew at Napoli. Actually there with the gangsters and smashed out of his brain. And the intrusion was incredible as well, because the son that he had who became the beach footballer, there's a TV cat crew in her bed. She's in bed having had the baby, and the TV crew are in the room. I mean, it's extraordinary. You know, and that's the kid that Maradona originally denied fathering, the first of the many. But he wrongly denied it. Eventually, he did acknowledge him, as you say. But so there we are, Diego Maradona, what a life. And the best footballer in heaven. That's very clear at the moment, isn't it? And let's, you know, we don't want to, you know, we don't want to send too many more away anytime soon. Right. Let's get on and talk the football, shall we, Terry, from this midweek. Where should we go? I mean, the might as well do Barcelona while we're on. Messi told to rest for once. I've got to say thank you. You know, I look at the guy. I love him, and I just think sometimes just give him a rest, let him have a break. You know, the group was well set anyway. Dynamo Kiev, obviously not massively strong opponents. But it gave an opportunity, didn't it? So Dest scored his goal. Braithwaite got two. Even some guy called Griezmann even managed to get a goal as well. And it the contrast between the relative ease there compared to what they've endured through La Liga is stark.
Well, they've been excellent, impeccable in the Champions League so far. They've been very, very good. And it was the right decision. Not only that, it was the journey to Kiev and back as well. And Messi had just come back from international duty. So it was, as you said, with the group all set up, it was the ideal opportunity. And one that I would imagine Messi would have welcomed, to be perfectly honest, because he knows there's a lot of serious work to be done in La Liga. So domestically at the moment, that's their priority. They did the job, perfectly well. Gay players, I was happy to see Alenia get a playing opportunity as well. And pleased to see Ricky Pooch come on. Because when he came on, he showed what we saw last season. And hopefully it should be, you know, obvious to Koeman that he shouldn't be isolated and left out completely. And he deserves to be considered for a role in the team. So, the first half was tougher going. But the second half, they run away with it. And as you said, even Braithwaite can offer something as that easier identifiable centre forward. So a good workout for Barcelona, and now they can focus firmly on catch up in La Liga.
Mingueza, what did you make of him?
Yeah, he did all right. Back. Yeah, he did fine. I mean, we're talking about Dynamo Kiev, decent, they're in the Champions League. Yeah. So they're decent opposition, and he looks more than comfortable. A little bit anxious at times in possession of the ball. But obviously can play the Barcelona way. I thought he was excellent. Julian Firpo again was a little bit casual, a bit lackadaisical, which is slightly disappointing. But he eventually ended up playing centre-back. Jordi Alba coming on playing left-side defence as well. So there was a few things for Koeman to look at in terms of other options going forward this season.
Right, so let's do the Inter versus Real Madrid next. Now, Terry, there are, with all due respect to your profession, there are some thick footballers around in the world. Arturo Vidal took that to, I mean, what on earth was he thinking?
Yeah.
You know, it was such an important game for Inter, the bottom of the group, and he just loses his rag. And the thing that strikes me, does he not know that there's VAR? So he loses his rag with the referee. So there is a case these days for going to the referee and saying, in this case, Anthony Taylor, saying, Anthony, check the VAR. Don't kick off. He fouled me. Check the VAR. There's a case for that, isn't there? Because it might just prompt the referee to check.
I think that's what caused the rage, though. I think that was his initial reaction. He got the yellow card. Yeah. And he could see then the referee wasn't doing the signal to his ear to say he was talking to someone.
He didn't get a chance, did he? Because six interplayers are all...
And then, you know, what he did then with the second yellow is it was aggressive behaviour. It was in the referee's face and deserved another yellow card. Yeah. And how just ridiculous. I mean, we're talking about rage again. And he sees rage with playing against Real Madrid. It's not the first time he's been sent off against Real Madrid. And it was... incredibly stupid because, you know, his team needed to win that game and to play for 60 minutes without, you know, with a man down. The responsibility for that defeat, a lot of it lies on his shoulders. Because after that, they were already behind. Real Madrid were already clear of the better team. But we're down to 10 men, Inter had no chance of putting it back.
Yeah. I know we focus on the Spanish teams. But they're bad, aren't they? Yeah. How this guy plays for them, and he looks the spitting image of Ashley Young, who obviously retired 30 years ago. I watch it every now and again. Every time I put it on, I think, is he still playing? Are they, you know, is this Inter, the great Inter? Yeah. And I just think it's bizarre that how awful they are.
They were so one-dimensional as well. Every pass was defeat. And about four or five times during the whole game, it worked. And they got from one end of the pitch to the other, but they didn't finish off the chance. The final ball was lacking, or the final attempt on goal was off target. And they just kept doing it. Every pass was defeat. Nothing was into space. Players weren't making runs into space. No one was running in behind. And I don't think Conte is going to be there much longer, if I'm being honest. They've given him so much backing. He's built a squad of players that he wanted. And the only one that's suffering is Christian Eriksen, who clearly Conte didn't want. Inter made the decision to bring him in because he was relatively cheap for a big-name player because his contract was running down. And I think that'll go against Conte as well. So, you know, I keep an interest in Christian Eriksen because he was excellent at Spurs. I think my prediction is he'll be there longer than Conte, despite the speculation linking him with him move away. But I think that Conte will be gone before him.
I always think it's a terrible move for a player's career to go somewhere because you're cheap. I think that Sandro would be an example when he went to Everton, isn't it? Where it's so tempting for a club to think, oh, well, what have we got to lose? Because we can sell him for more than that anyway. And so you go somewhere and the manager has no part, you're not part of his plans. And then that's years of your career wasted, isn't it? You've only got so many moves as a player, haven't you, before?
Yeah. He was due a big move, to be fair, wasn't he, Eric?
Yeah. I mean, he didn't have to. Who could have said Spurs?
But he was, having made the decision to move on.
Yeah.
He was good at Spurs. He's good for Denmark. He was, you know, due a move in terms of going somewhere and being an important player. And he's obviously gone to a manager who didn't particularly want him. So it was, you know, Inter are not, they're not a good team.
Yeah.
They've got good players. But as a team, their style wasn't particularly good. And Real Madrid, on the other hand, were excellent. So they played really well. A weakened team as well, when you look at the players that were missing. But they looked a far better outfit than Inter Milan. So credit to Real Madrid. And that table was turned around completely now, where it looks relatively comfortable for them going forward.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Strange old group, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they've got Shakhtar and... who just plummeted.
Yeah.
The Shakhtar that we saw beat them at Real Madrid in the home game. And they've plummeted since, conceding goals left, right and centre. Borussia and Real Madrid, Inter are out of it now. And Real Madrid are, you know, looking as if they, you know, can finish, they will finish in the top two and possibly can top the group now.
Yeah, as long as they don't go to pot again in the return game. That's next,
Shakhtar,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, so... which leaves the team in more trouble, really, is Atleti, isn't it? After a 0-0 draw with Lokomotiv Moscow. So we've said lots and lots of positive things about them in terms of their recent performances, but twice in La Liga early in the season, and then in this game as well, in the previous game against Lokomotiv Moscow, they got a 1-1 draw. That inability to finish a team off is just there bubbling under the surface, isn't it? And it's causing them problems.
Yeah, I think in this game they played well. They had chances, didn't take them. That was the thing. Come up against a goalkeeper that was in great form. But you still would imagine, you know, that Atletico would somehow try and find the breakthrough. Missing Suarez, missing Costa. And when you look at it, on the face of it, their squad is still pretty thin, you know. Mm. We tend to think, you know, that it's a big squad. It's not as big as Real Madrid. It's not as big as Barcelona's because Barcelona are using more players this season, although some of them are young that we didn't know too much about before the season started. But Atletico, every now and then you see substitutes come and you think, oh, you know, why have they, you know, brought him up? Who's that? Google and that sort of stuff. And with, you know, two or three injuries can hurt them in terms of their squad. So they've got plenty of work to do. I mean, they've got Bayern at home next game, then Red Bull Salzburg away in their last match. But they are working harder in this group than I thought they would have to. I assumed that Bayern would win. I assumed the group. I assumed Atletico would finish in second. But it's a lot tighter than what you expect. Be interesting though, to know what how the focus is at Atletico. Whether they, as the season's ticking away now, but they were, their focus is on La Liga as opposed to the Champions League. Well, to see where their motivation is drawn.
It should
to
be on La Liga, shouldn't it?
It should be, yeah. I mean, it's they've had relative success in this. They've had some great adventures in this competition, even last year, knocking Liverpool out, then disappointed further down the line. But I would imagine the focus, not to say you can't focus at this stage of the season on both, but their motivation levels might be a touch higher now for the La Liga, as opposed to, you know, going in this in far in this competition. But they'll be wanting to qualify, no doubt about that. And I'm still pretty sure they will. I think, you know, something against Bayern Munich, pretty much sees them through. So it's, they're making hard work of it, but I do believe they'll still get there.
Whereas Sevilla are through, aren't they? Lovely goal by Rakitic, and then Munir got a winner away to Krasnodar. So they can't win the Europa League, Terry. They've blown it.
I wonder if there was a thought afterwards. I don't think there would have been. I mean, they did that last year. Most of the players are still there. The manager's still in charge. So their, you know, focus was firmly on getting out of the group. They've done it in style, done it early as well, which can then help them in terms of the La Liga campaign, because they've also got some catching up to do. So as you said, it was an excellent strike from Rakitic. Left it late again, but Sevilla have a habit of doing that. They obviously are a fit team, strong, and go to the very end. Good strength in depth to bring players off the bench to help that cause as well. So it's been a really good campaign from them. One that they've made light work of, to be honest. I mean, it's we're talking about Krasnodar and Rennes. We know they're not giants of European football, but again, the you know, Chelsea and Sevilla have wrapped this up with relative ease.
Does it matter finishing top of the group some of the time? Because obviously top teams play second team in the next phase, but quite a lot of the time that's a bit mixed up anyway, isn't it, between the groups? Or, you know, finishing top means that you avoid the teams in really, really good form? Or does it? Or by February, is it all changed anyway?
Probably. Yeah. I think what I saw the list of teams that are already through, guaranteed, and it's
usual. That's the problem with the Champions League, isn't it?
It's Groundhog Day. So I think it's about six teams through, and I thought, oh, that's a shock. So I don't think you're going to get an easy draw. There are some where you will go, oh yeah, we'll take that. There will be some where all the top teams will be thinking, oh, well, you know, let's hope we get them in the next round. From then on, it doesn't apply. But maybe in the first knockout stage, you might get a slightly favourable draw by finishing top of your group and finishing and playing against someone who's finished second in their group.
No, that the team that you're referring to, Terry, the one that you want to play, is the one that knocks Manchester City out when Pep comes up with some ludicrous plan about playing his goalkeeper on the left wing. This is the year. This is the year that these plans will come to fruition. I think that's the Champions League done, isn't it? I think we've done everyone in the Champions League. So, quick look at the Europa League. Granada, Luis Suarez not available for Atleti, but he turns out for his other team. But obviously, like a good weekend player, he's got a Saturday team and a Sunday team. So, the other, Luis Suarez, scored for Granada, who they're battling through. Important win, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they found it tough in the league lately. They've had the recent game where they had no players and they're losing last week against Valladolid, but they're able to switch it on and they're in great shape in this competition. So you can understand their focus being on, you know, the European adventure. I'm not suggesting for one moment that they're going to get in trouble in La Liga. And now, you know, they're pretty much nearly through. Still top of the group. Another good win. It's, you know, it's a tricky little adventure for them, balancing it. I saw the lineup and I thought, you know, this is a mixture. It's not the strongest 11, but it's not severely weakened like Villarreal playing their B team. So Granada haven't got that luxury. So more than enough players there to see them through. And it's a fantastic story, Granada, really is.
Villarreal got a draw away to Maccabi Tel Aviv. Enric Sabri sent off, Terry. That was a blast from the past, wasn't it? But so with a weakened team. They're not done yet, are they? So a little bit, a Liverpool similar situation, isn't it? In that it does make sense, I think, to ease off the accelerator in good time, as opposed to sort of blast your way through it and then only have sort of one game to rotate at the end. So I know it leaves you slightly vulnerable, but they should be fine, Villarreal, shouldn't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, and they've played a much-changed team all the way through.
Yeah.
Unai Emery has chosen to do that. And I think it's a good example of a squad of players that has more talent there than we probably recognise. Because when you see Villarreal play week in, week out, same 13, 14 players, same, you know, starting 11, the three or four that come off the bench are regulars. And then when you dip a little bit deeper, they've got some talented youngsters. So I think that's Carlos Bacca as well, people like that, they get opportunities in this. Kubo's playing in the Europa League, so it's giving him opportunities. So I think we're seeing the good young talent of Villarreal and the squad players, and that's more than enough to see them through. It's not the toughest of groups, and I think Unai Emery has managed it well.
So one more, AZ Alkmaar 0, Real Sociedad 0. I didn't see that, but apparently there were quite a lot of chances in it, which sort of rolls us on a bit, Terry, to is the big game of this weekend, Real Sociedad via Real, title contenders.
Yes. Yeah, I think it is. And it's Sunday evening. It's the big game Sunday evening. So it's one to look forward to, not only because of where they are in the league, I think because of the style of play from both teams suggests that it should be a really good game to watch. Real Sociedad played a stronger team. They've got a decent-sized squad. Villarreal were able to rest most of their players. So, you know, that will be one advantage to Villarreal. But I think that the Real Sociedad are in good form, and the players that they can bring in that didn't play in the Europa League are still a good quality. So I think we have to talk about that as being possibly the game of the weekend. Valencia Atletico stands out as another one as well, doesn't it? Valencia with no European football, a much changed squad, showing great spirit on a number of occasions this season. And seem to be thriving on the role as underdogs at the moment. So can they be the first team to defeat Atletico, not only this season, but going back a considerable amount, well, since lockdown, play resumed after lockdown? I don't think so, but it'd be, a game certainly worth looking forward to on Saturday afternoon.
Real Madrid and Barcelona, you would imagine in normal times should be regulation victories. Real Madrid, Alaves and Barca against Osasuna.
Yeah, I think both teams might find it harder than we expect because the opposition that they're playing are better defensively than they are offensively. But we shouldn't forget Osasuna went there and romped home at the end of the season. So they'll take confidence from the fact that it's not an impossible task to go to Barcelona and get the win. And so Barcelona have to be somewhere near their best to make sure they get all 3 points. Alaves will play a back five. They'll play a midfield four. They might line up with the two strikers up front, but one of them will drop back into midfield. And they'll just be determined to hold on to Real Madrid as long as they possibly can. So I think they could both be tricky games, actually, but I expect both to win.
We've got to say, welcome to Mads, our latest Patreon. So thank you
Mads.
Very much for your kind contribution. This is the sort of thing we've been doing, basically. I mean, we will do some different stuff, but the games just keep coming thick and fast through this European phase. And so this is sort of what we're doing, basically, isn't it, Terry? Having a look back at the European stuff, keeping on top of that. And then obviously the Monday is the regular Monday or Tuesday, depending on how big the Monday night game is, really.
I think Monday is the regular Betis game.
Yes, yeah. depends who Betis are playing on Monday night as to whether we do Monday or Tuesday. So we will be back. So thank you to everybody for your contribution. Thank you to you, Terry. And we'll be back with another regular podcast next week and another Patreon only one soon.